be with a princeling like Eris and not a low-born nothing like me, because I couldn't stand the sight of it, right down to my god's damned bones. But go ahead, Nesta. Go ahead and fucking marry him. And good fucking luck to you. Eris is the brute, she shot back. He's a brute and a piece of shit, and I would marry him because I am just like him. The words echoed through the room. His pained face gutted her. I deserve Eris. Her voice cracked. Cassian panted, his eyes still lit with fury, and now with shock. Nesta said hoarsely, You are good, Cassian, and you are brave and brilliant and kind. I could kill anyone who has ever made you feel less than that, less than what you are, and I know I'm part of that group, and I hate it. Her eyes burned, but she fought past it. You are everything I have never been, and will never be good enough for. Your friends know it, and I have carried it around with me all this time, that I do not deserve you. The fury slid from his face. Nesta didn't stop the tears that flowed or the words that tumbled out. I didn't deserve you before the war or afterward, and I certainly don't now. She let out a low, broken laugh. Why do you think I shoved you away? Why do you think I wouldn't speak to you? She put a hand on her aching chest. After my father died, after I failed in so many ways, denying myself of you, she sobbed. It was my punishment. Don't you understand that? She could barely see him through her tears. From the moment I met you, I wanted you more than reason. From the moment I saw you in my house, you were all I could think about, and it terrified me. No one had ever held such power over me, and I'm still terrified that if I let myself have you, it will be taken away. Someone will take it away, and if you're dead, she buried her face in her hands. It doesn't matter, she whispered. I do not deserve you, and I never, ever will. Utter silence filled the room, such silence that she wondered if he'd left, and lowered her hands to see if he was there. Cassian stood before her, tears streaming down his beautiful, perfect face. She didn't balk from it, letting him see her like this, her most raw, most base self. He had always seen all of her anyway. He opened his mouth and tried to speak, had to swallow and try again. Nesta saw all the words in his eyes, though, the same ones she knew lay in her own. So he stopped trying to speak and closed the distance between them, slid a hand into her hair, the other going around her waist and tugging her against him. He said nothing as he dipped his head, mouth brushing the tears sliding along one of her cheeks. Then the other. She closed her eyes, letting herself savor his lips on her overhot skin, the way his breath caressed her cheek. Each gentle kiss echoed those words she'd seen in his eyes. Cassian pulled back and remained that way long enough that she opened her eyes again to find his face mere inches from her own.
You're not going to marry Eris,
he said roughly. No, she breathed. His eyes blazed.
There will be no one else for either of us.
Yes, she whispered.
Ever,
he promised. Nesta laid a hand on his muscled chest, letting the thunderous beating of the heart beneath echo into her palm. Let it travel down her arm, into her own chest, her own heart. Ever, she swore. It was all he needed, all she needed. Cassian's mouth met hers,
and the world ceased to exist. The kiss was punishing and exalting, thorough and frenzied, a claiming and a yielding. She had no words for it. She flung her arms around him, pressing as close as she could get, meeting his tongue stroke for stroke. He growled and nudged her back toward the bed, his mouth devouring and tasting and saying everything she couldn't yet voice. But one day, maybe soon, she could. For him, she'd fight to find the courage to say it. The backs of her legs hit the mattress, and he broke their kiss to attend to their clothes. She expected tearing and rending, but he gently removed her dress, fingers trembling as they unhooked each button down the back of her gown. Her own trembled as she removed his shirt. Then they were naked and staring at each other again with those unspoken words in their eyes. And she let him lay her upon the bed, let him climb atop her. There was nothing rough or wild about what followed. She didn't want his head between her legs, didn't even want his fingers. When he slid one down the center of her, she let him feel that she was ready, and then took his hand, interlacing their fingers as her other wrapped around his cock, and guided him toward her. He nudged at her entrance, and then halted. His eyes met hers, and then Cassian kissed her deeply as he slid home. She gasped, not at the fullness of having him inside her, but at that thing in her chest. The thing that thundered and beat wildly as he looked at her again, slid out nearly to the tip, and thrust back in. On that second thrust, the thing in her chest, her heart, on that second thrust, it yielded entirely to him. On his third, he kissed her again. On the fourth, Nesta twined her arms around his head and neck and held him there as she kissed and kissed and kissed him. On the fifth, the walls of that inner fortress of ancient iron came down. Cassian pulled away, as if sensing it, and his eyes flared as they met her own. But he kept moving in her, making love to her thoroughly, unhurriedly. So Nesta let all that lay beyond those iron walls unspool toward him, thread after thread of pure golden light flowed into him, and he met it with his own. Where those threads wove together, life glowed like starfire, and she had never seen anything more beautiful, felt anything more beautiful. She was crying, and she didn't know why, only that she never wanted it to end. This binding between them, the feeling of him moving so deep in her that she wanted him imprinted beneath her skin. His tears dripped onto her face, and she reached up to brush them away. He leaned his head into her hand, nuzzling her palm. "Say it," Cassian whispered against her skin. She knew what he meant. Somehow she knew what he meant. Nesta waited until he'd thrust again, driving as deep into her as he'd ever gone, and whispered, "You're mine." He groaned, thrusting hard. She whispered, "And I am yours." Those golden threads between their very souls shone with the words, as if they formed a harp strummed by a heavenly hand. For it was music between their souls, always had been, and his voice was her favorite melody. "Nesta,"
She heard the plea in her name. He was close and wanted her to go with him, wanted to tumble into ecstasy together. It was important to him for some reason that for this joining, this moment, they went as one. Cassian lowered his head to her breast, teeth clamping around her nipple as his tongue flicked against it. It was all Nesta needed to spur her toward climax. She moaned, and he did it again, timing his tongue to the hard thrust of his cock. Again, again. The golden threads shimmered and sang, and she couldn't take it. The music between their souls, the feel of his body on her and in her, and release blasted through her, obliterating every last bit of that inner wall, raising mountains and forests, wiping the world clean with light and pleasure, stars crashing down from the heavens in a never-ending rain. Cassian roared as he came, and the sound was the summons of a hunt. A symphony, a single clear horn playing as dawn broke over the world. There was only this moment, this thing shared between them, and it lasted for eternity. Time was of no consequence. Time had always stood still around him, around them. He spilled and spilled himself into her, longer than ever before, as if he'd been holding himself back all the times before now, as if he had let his own inner wall come crumbling down. Forever. 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 The word was echoed in their every breath, every pounding of their hearts, so in sync that they seemed to beat as one. Then silence fell, exquisite and serene, and Cassian remained buried in her, staring down at her with wonder and joy in his face. Nesta reached up to kiss him. One kiss led to another, and another, and hunger rose like the tide within her, between them. And then Cassian was moving in her again, faster and harder, and time ceased to exist once more. Hours later, days and weeks and months and millennia later, when they were both finally spent, when their souls had cleaved together entirely, Cassian pulled out of her and collapsed against the bed. Nesta could hardly remember words, but she found them when she whispered into the darkness, "Stay with me." A shudder rocked through him, but he only smiled as he tucked her into his side. And warm and safe and home at last in Cassian's arms, Nesta slept. Chapter 59. Nesta opened her eyes. She knew she was warm and content, though it took her a moment to remember the reason, to realize she was still in Cassian's arms. She reveled in it, savored each breath that brushed against her temple, felt the press of his fingers along her lower back. A calm settled over her, strikingly similar to what she felt when she did her daily mind stilling. Cassian awoke soon after, giving her a sleepy, sated smile. It softened into something tender, and for long minutes they lay there, staring at each other, Cassian idly brushing his hand down her back. Caressing soon turned to more fervent touching, and as the dawn broke, they tangled again, their lovemaking thorough and unhurried. When she again lay sweating and panting beside him, running a finger down the groove of his muscled stomach, Nesta murmured, "Good morning." Cassian's fingers idly smoothed her hair. "Good morning to you, too." He glanced toward the mantle, the small wooden clock in its center, then lurched upright. Shit! Nesta frowned. You have somewhere to be? He was already hopping into his pants, scanning the floor for the rest of his clothes. Nesta silently pointed to the other side of the bed where his shirt lay atop her dress. Snowball fight! I'll be late! Nesta had to unload each word of his statement, but she could only ask, What? Annual tradition with Reese and Az. We go up to the mountain cabin. Remind me to take you there one day. And, well, it's a long story, but we've done it pretty much every year for centuries, and I haven't won in years. If I don't win this year, I will never hear the end of it. All of this was said while shoving himself into his shirt, leather jacket, and boots. Nesta just laughed. You three, the most feared warriors in all the land, have an annual snowball fight? Cassian reached the door, throwing her a wicked grin. Did I mention we take a steam in the birchen attached to the cabin afterward? From that wicked grin, she knew he meant completely naked. Nesta sat up, hair sliding over her breasts. His eyes dipped lower, a muscle pounding in his neck. For a heartbeat, she hoped he'd lunge for her again. Indeed, his nostrils flared, scenting the need that boiled in her just at the sight of his gaze roving freely over her body, the way every part of him tensed. But Cassian swallowed, grin and wickedness fading as he cleared his throat. After the fight, I need to do a comprehensive inspection of the legions in Illyria for a few days. I'll be back after that. Without so much as a farewell kiss, he vanished. 3 days passed with no word from Cassian. He'd been replaced in training by stone-faced Azriel, who was more aloof than usual and wouldn't give her a smile. But he didn't object when she brought her symphonia to the ring each morning for some extra motivation while exercising. The priestesses had marveled at the gift, a few of them dancing to the music. But Nesta had only been able to think about how much time and effort Cassian had put into it, how he had known what such a present would mean to her. Her entire body ached with need, setting her teeth on edge. 3 days without him might as well have been 3 months. She'd become desperate enough for him that her hand now slid between her legs in the bath, in bed, even during lunch in her room. But release left her empty, as if her body knew it needed him in her, filling her. She'd asked Azriel every day when he'd be back, and Azriel had only said, soon, before conducting their lessons. Maybe she'd gone mad. Maybe that was what that iron wall around her mind had been, the thing that kept her sanity in check. Surely it wasn't normal to think of a person this much, to need them this much. It was that worry that hounded her as they wrapped up lessons, panting and sweating despite the frigid morning, thanks to the Valkyrie sprints they'd been practicing. 10 seconds at a full sprint, 30 seconds trotting, another 10 seconds sprinting, for 15 minutes straight. Once they could get through it, they'd add in their shields, then swords, all of it designed to build their stamina, and focus on controlling their breathing between bursts of attack and retreat. All of it utter insanity that couldn't quite dull the edge of Nesta's fretting as she asked Emery and Gwyn, Do you want to stay over at the house with me tonight? She motioned to the archway. Have a read-in or something? Gwyn blinked, considering. She had not set foot outside the library, save to come to these lessons or to use the practice ring to hack at that ribbon. But she said, I'll ask Clotho. Emery smirked at Nesta, as if aware of why she needed company. Sure. That evening, Nesta and Emery read in companionable silence in the private library, waiting for Gwyn. Emery had sprawled across the armchair, legs dangling over an arm, her back against the other. Without looking up from the book in her lap, she said, Cassian must be really good at sex, if you're so tied up in knots while he's gone. Nesta cleared her throat, dispelling the memories of his mouth, his strong body, the way his silken black hair fell on either side of his face as he lay over her, swaying as he pounded into her. He's... She made a low noise in her throat.
I figured, Emery said, chuckling. He's got the walk.
The walk? Emery smirked.
You know, when a male knows how to use his cock well and struts around with that swagger that basically declares it to everyone.
Nesta rolled her eyes. I'd hope he knows how to use it well after being alive for 500 years, she snorted. Though I've met plenty who proved that wrong.
Emery arched a brow for her to continue, but a knock sounded on the library door. Gwyn's head popped in, and she scanned the room before entering. She bore a small bag, presumably of what she'd need for the night.
Nesta had already asked the house to prepare a bedroom for all three of them to share, and she'd entered the private library to find it transformed. By the window against the far wall, a work table and chairs had been swapped for three cots, each laden with blankets and pillows. Gwyn smiled, though her pulse pounded wildly against the column of her throat.
I'm sorry I'm late. Meryl made me go over a paragraph with her 10 times, Gwyn sighed. Please tell me all the chocolate is for us.
The house had stocked the table between the armchairs with piles of chocolate, truffles and confections and bars of it, along with cookies and small finger cakes, and a platter of cheeses and fruit, and carafes of water and various juices.
Gwyn surveyed the table. Did you go to all this trouble?
Oh, no, Emery said, eyes glowing. Nesta's been holding out on us. Nesta scoffed, but Emery said, the house will get you anything you want. Just say it aloud. At Gwyn's raised brows, Emery said, I'd like a slice of pistachio cake, please. A plate of one appeared before her, as well as a bowl of whipped cream topped with raspberries. Gwyn blinked.
You live in a magic house.
It likes to read, Nesta admitted, patting the stack of romances. We've bonded over that. Gwyn whispered to the room.
What's your favorite book?
One thumped on the table beside Emery's cake, and Gwyn squawked in surprise, but then rubbed her hands together.
Oh, this is delightful.
That smile means trouble, Emery said. Gwyn's grin just widened. 2 hours later, Nesta found herself fully clothed in a bathtub in the middle of the private library, the entire thing filled with bubbles. No water, just bubbles. In matching tubs on either side of her, Emery and Gwyn were giggling.
This is ridiculous, Nesta said, even as her mouth curved upward.
Each one of their requests had gotten more and more absurd, and Nesta might have felt like they were exploiting the house had it not been so exuberant in answering their commands, adding creative flourishes. Like the fact that each bubble held a tiny bird fluttering about inside. Silent fireworks still exploded in the far corner of the room, and a miniature Pegasus, Nesta's request, made only when her friends goaded her into submitting one, fed on a small patch of grass by the shelf, content to ignore them. A cake taller than Cassian stood in the center of the room, lit with 1,000 candles. 6 frogs danced circles around a red and white spotted toadstool, the waltzes provided by Nesta's symphonia. Emery wore a diamond crown and 6 strings of pearls. Gwyn sported a broad-brimmed hat, fit for any fine lady, perched at a rakish angle on her head. A lace parasol leaned against her other shoulder, and she twirled it idly as she surveyed the windows, the world beyond, and said in a hushed voice,
I sometimes wonder if I shall ever have the courage to go out there again. I fear every day that I won't.
Nesta's smile slid away. She considered her words before she said, I feel the same. Because this existence, living in the house, training, working in the library, it wasn't real life, not entirely. When she was allowed to return to the city proper, Then she'd face life again, see if she was worthy of it. The thought made her stomach twist. Dispelling the gloom, Gwyn leaped out of her tub, bubbles spraying, and padded for her bag. "Now, don't you two dare laugh at me, but I brought something for us to do. I didn't realize we'd have a magic house to keep us occupied." She pulled out a bundle of various colored threads. "My sister and I used to braid bracelets and put these little charms on them, full of wishes for each other." She lifted a sack, dumping a few silver coins into her palm. They were no larger than her pinky nail, and as thin as a wafer. Her voice grew soft. "We believed that the wish would come true once the bracelet fell off." Emery asked gently, "What was her name?"
"Katrin."
Gwyn's voice held so much pain and longing.
"We were fraternal twins. Her hair was dark as onyx, her skin pale as the moon, and she was as moody as the sea."
She laughed quietly.
"Despite her faults and mine, we loved each other dearly. We were all each other had while growing up. She was the only one I could truly rely on. I miss her every day."
Nesta couldn't stop herself from thinking of Feyre. Gwyn said,
"I wish I could just have one more moment with her. Just one, to tell her that I love her and say goodbye."
She wiped at her eyes, lifting her head, looked right at Nesta.
"It's what really mattered in the end, you know. Not our petty fights or differences. I forgot all of that the moment she..."
Gwyn shook her head.
"It's all that matters."
Nesta nodded slowly. Perhaps it wasn't just her and Feyre then. Perhaps all sisters had difficulties, fights, chasms between them. She wasn't perfect, but neither was Feyre. They had both made mistakes, and both had long, long lives ahead of them. What had occurred in the past did not have to dictate the future. So Nesta nodded again, letting Gwyn see her understanding.
"It's all that matters,"
Nesta agreed. Gwyn smiled and then straightened, clearing her throat.
"I managed to track the thread and charms down before solstice, thinking I'd make them for you as little presents. But they took longer to arrive than I thought they would, so I figured we could make the bracelets tonight."
She carefully set the materials on the nearest table. Nesta and Emery rose to survey the variety of threads, all colors and hues, all carefully bundled.
"Show me how to do it,"
Emery said softly. Nesta wondered if Gwyn's words had resonated with her, too. What pain and hope Emery might be holding within her. But Gwyn grinned, beginning her demonstration by selecting three colors that she thought matched Emery's spirit, she claimed. Green, purple, and gold. Nesta refrained from snickering and selected colors for Gwyn. Blue, white, and teal. Emery, in turn, selected Nesta's colors. Navy blue, crimson, and silver. Nesta and Emery dutifully tried to copy Gwyn's easy steps, doubling up the thread, knotting it, cutting the looped bits, then pinning the top of the bracelet beneath a heavy book as they separated each length by color, and then began a process of looping and pulling back and forth. Emery's knots were flawless.
Nesta's...
"Your bracelet is going to be an eyesore, Gwyn." Nesta scowled at the wobbly, bunched-up mess that was her first 10 rows.
"Keep going,"
Gwyn said, leagues ahead on her own bracelet and beginning to add pretty patterns within the rows.
"The knots will get better looking with practice. Just tell me when you've gotten to the halfway point, and then we'll add the charm."
They worked in music-filled companionship, idle chatter bouncing between them, Emery and Gwyn occasionally laughing at Nesta's awful workmanship.
"Now," Gwyn said, when they were halfway through, "we'll make wishes for each other."
She reached for one of the tiny coins.
"I'll just hold this in my hand, Think of something for Emery and wait, Nesta said, catching Gwyn's hand before it could touch the charm. Let me. Her friends regarded her curiously, and Nesta swallowed. Let me make a wish for all of us, she explained, gathering the three charms. A small gift for the friends who had become like sisters, a chosen family, like the one Feyre had found for herself. Nesta squeezed the charms in her palm, closing her eyes, and said, I wish for us to have the courage to go out into the world when we are ready, but to always be able to find our way back to each other, no matter what. Gwyn and Emery cheered at that. And when Nesta opened her eyes, palm unfurling, she could have sworn the coins glowed faintly. Chapter 60. Cassian had been gone for 5 days. 5 days to inspect every single one of the Illyrian legions and remember how to behave like a normal, sane male rather than a lovesick puppy. But somehow, by the time he returned, a shift had occurred. Not just the world-altering shift that had happened on winter solstice between him and Nesta, but a shift between Nesta and Emery and Gwyn. He emerged into the frigid morning to find the three of them already in the practice ring. They stood around the beam, the ribbon drifting gracefully on the icy wind. Gwyn held a blade in her hand, and Emery and Nesta stood a few feet away. All three wore braided, colorful bracelets with silver charms dangling from them. Cassian lingered at the doorway as Nesta murmured to Gwyn, You've got this! Asriel came up beside him, silent as the shadows that wreathed his wings. Gwyn stared the ribbon down like an enemy on a battlefield. It rippled in the wind, dancing away, its motions unpredictable as any foe. Do it for the miniature Pegasus, Emery said. Cassian had no idea what it meant, but Gwyn's lips twitched upward. Nesta laughed. The sound might as well have been a lightning strike to his head for how much it rocked him, that laugh. Free and light, and so unlike anything he'd ever heard from her that even Asriel blinked. A true laugh. The miniature Pegasus, Nesta said, was an illusion and is now back in his make-believe meadow. He loved Gwyn most, Emery teased, despite your efforts to woo him. They fell silent again as Gwyn shifted her feet, angling the blade. The wind waggled the ribbon again, as if taunting her. Cassian glanced over at Az, but his attention was fixed on the young priestess, admiration and quiet encouragement shining from his face. Gwyn whispered, I am the rock against which the surf crashes. Nesta straightened at the words, as if they were a prayer and a summons. Gwyn lifted the blade. Nothing can break me. Cassian's throat tightened, and even from across the ring he could see Nesta's eyes gleaming with pride and pain. Emery said, Nothing can break us. The world seemed to pause at the words, as if it had been following one path and now branched off in another direction. In 100 years, 1,000, this moment would still be etched in his mind, that he would tell his children, his grandchildren, right then and there. That was when it all changed. Asriel went wholly still, as if he too had felt the shift, as if he too were aware that far larger forces peered into that training ring as Gwyn moved. Smooth as the Sidra, swift as the wind off the Illyrian mountains, her entire body working in singing harmony, Gwyn lunged toward the ribbon, twirled, and as she spun, her arm opened up, executing a perfect backhanded slice that cut the winter morning itself. Half of the ribbon fluttered to the red stone, a flawless, precise slice. Not one frayed strand rippled in the wind as the severed ribbon hanging from the beam flapped. Nesta bent down, picked up the fallen half of the ribbon, and solemnly tied it around Gwyn's brow, a makeshift version of what the priestesses wore atop their heads with their stones. But Cassian had never seen Gwyn display her invoking stone. Gwyn lifted trembling fingers to her brow, touching the ribbon with which Nesta had crowned her. Nesta's voice was thick as she declared, "Valkyrie." It became the ritual to cut that ribbon, to be crowned with its severed half, and anointed Valkyrie. Gwyn was the first, Emery the second. By the end of training that morning, Nesta became the third. It made facing Cassian only slightly easier, even if the need within her had only grown worse, clawing at the underside of her skin, begging to get out, to get to him. Every time she met his stare or got within a few feet of him, it roared at her to strip off her clothes and offer herself to him. She focused on the white ribbon around her brow, focused on what the three of them had accomplished. The lesson finished, and she might have dragged Cassian down to her bedroom had he not simply taken to the skies and left. He didn't come back until the following morning. He was avoiding her. But the next morning she understood why, or at least he had a reason for his vanishing act. The training ring had been transformed again. An obstacle course lay all around it, coiled like a snake throughout. Nesta was one of the last to arrive and joined the crowd of females who lingered by the door, murmuring about it as Cassian and Azriel turned to the mall. Cassian said, "Valkyries were fearless and brilliant warriors on their own, but their true strength came from being a highly trained unit." He motioned to the obstacle course. "Alone, none of you will be able to get through that course. Together, you can find a way." Emery snorted. Cassian leveled a grin at her. "Looks simple, doesn't it?" Emery had the good sense to look nervous. Azriel clapped his hands and all the females straightened. "You will work in groups of three." Gwyn asked Az, her teal eyes bright, "What do we get if we finish the course?" Az's shadows danced around him.
"Since there's no chance in hell any of you will finish the course, we didn't bother to get a prize."
Boos sounded. Gwyn lifted her chin in challenge. "We look forward to proving you wrong." Proving Azriel and Cassian wrong would take a while, it seemed. Gwyn, Emery, and Nesta made it the farthest in the 3 hours, a grand whopping halfway. Rosalind, Deirdre, and Anunke made it to the obstacle behind them before time was up, and Anunke's golden hair was matted with blood from the blow she'd taken to the head from a spinning, many-armed wooden thing.
"Sadistic monsters,"
Gwyn hissed, as the three friends limped toward the water station, defeat heavy on their shoulders.
"We try again tomorrow,"
Emery swore, sporting a black eye thanks to the swinging log that had knocked her on her ass before Nesta could grab her.
"We keep trying until we wipe that smug look off their stupid, perfect faces."
Indeed, Azriel and Cassian had just leaned against the wall, arms crossed, and smiled at them the entire time. Gwyn threw Azriel a withering stare as she strode past him.
"See you tomorrow, Shadow Singer."
She tossed over a shoulder. Az stared after her, brows high with amusement. When he turned back, Nesta grinned. "You have no idea what you just started," she said. Az angled his head, hazel eyes narrowing as Gwyn reached the archway.
"Remember how Gwyn was with the ribbon?"
Nesta winked and clapped the Shadow Singer on the shoulder.
"You're the new ribbon, Az."
The obstacle course remained impossible. The bastards changed it every night. Each new morning was a different, harder challenge, but one that had an overall pattern. It usually began with some array of footwork, whether doing a swift run of knee-to-chest steps through a ladder on the ground or balancing on a suspended beam. Then came mental testing, puzzles that required them to think together, and then rely on each other to get through. And when they were thoroughly exhausted, the feats of strength came in. The three of them made it to the third stage only once in the next 2 weeks. Roslyn, Ananke, and Deirdre were close on their heels, propelling Gwyn to push her group harder. She wanted to be the first, wanted Nesta and Emery and her to be the ones who wiped the smirks from Azriel's and Cassian's faces, especially Azriel's. Never mind that after the first day, they only had an hour to get through the course. The other 2 hours were spent as a group, working on military training, marching in formation, harder and stupider than it looked, fighting side by side, more dangerous than it seemed, and learning how to move, think, breathe as a unit. But they kept at it, marched in Valkyrie phalanxes, fought as one with Cassian and Azriel playing their opponents, learned to hold their shields in place against the onslaught of the Illyrians' siphons, their towering male forms. Every bit of Valkyrie endurance training paid off. Every infernal squat or lunge now allowed them to brace their shields with little effort, to hold steady against an enemy attack. They exercised as one, in precise lines as they did their abdominal curls to the same beat, did push-ups together. If one collapsed, they all had to start over again, but they kept going. Through sweat and breath and blood, they forged themselves together. And sometimes, when the evening services were over, the three of them would gather in the library and read about military strategy, about Valkyrie lore, about the techniques of the ancients. More of the priestesses cut the ribbon. Roslyn, Deirdre, Ananke, Ilana, Lorelei. Everything Azriel and Cassian threw at them, they took and threw right back. And every night, Nesta ran the stairs of the house, farther and farther and farther. She hadn't been able to reach the bottom again since that fight with Amran, but she kept trying. No longer did memories and words send her rushing down it. Now she was driven by pure, unrelenting purpose. Nesta, Gwyn, and Emery defeated the obstacle course 2 months to the day after it had been brought in. Of course, it was on a day when all the priestesses had been summoned away by Clotho for some special ceremony, so there was no one to witness it other than Cassian and Azriel. Only Gwyn had been exempted from the ceremony, apparently. And when Gwyn reached the finish line, bloody and panting and grinning so wildly her teal eyes glowed like a sunlit sea, she only extended her battered hand to Azriel.
"Well, you already have your prize," Azriel said simply. "You just passed the blood rite qualifier. Congratulations."
Gwyn gaped. Nesta and Emery halted, but Gwyn said to him,
"That was why you invited them?"
Nesta had no idea what the priestess was talking about, but followed her gaze upward to the lip of the pit, where a stone-faced Lord Devlin and another male peered in, scowling. No doubt this was the reason the other priestesses had been occupied today. Cassian murmured to Nesta,
"I had a feeling today might be the day." Devlin seemed ready to erupt, his face purple with rage, but he looked to Cassian and nodded tersely.
"You told the priestesses not to come?" Nesta asked Cassian and Azriel.
"We informed Clotho that we might have some observers today,"
Azriel answered, eyes full of ice and death as he stared down Devlin. The man looked away from the Shadow Singer before grunting to his crony and flying eastward toward Illyria. Azriel went on, watching them vanish.
"Clotho explained it to the others, and they chose to find other ways to fulfill their day."
Nesta asked Gwyn, "But it seemed like you didn't know what we were doing." "Cassian and Azriel warned me that we'd be watched by males today, but didn't specify why. I had no idea it was the blood rite qualifier. Her eyes shone bright above the dirt smudged on her face.
Emery had blanched, though.
She asked Cassian, "We're not entering the blood rite, are we?"
"Only if you want to,"
Cassian assured her. She alone of the females here would understand the true horrors of the blood rite, Nesta knew.
"But we wanted Devlin, and whoever he tells, to understand that you're as talented as any Illyrian unit. This was the only way they'd get it. Being a Valkyrie means nothing to them, and you certainly don't need their approval, but..."
He glanced to Emery again.
"I wanted them to know what you've accomplished. That even though Valkyries don't have something akin to the blood rite, you're as trained as any warrior in Illyria."
"The courses?" Gwyn asked. "Different routes," Asriel said, "from various qualifiers over the centuries." Cassian grinned.
"Short of partaking in the blood rite, you're now as close to being Illyrian warriors as you can be."
Silence fell. Then Nesta said, wiping the blood from the corner of her bruised mouth, "I'd rather be a Valkyrie." The females murmured their agreement. Cassian laughed.
"Gods help us."
Chapter 61. One test remained. Not any Cassian had given her, or any decreed by Illyrians or Valkyries, but one she'd set for herself. Nesta figured today was as good as any to push herself on those last few hundred steps. Down and down and down she went, around and around and around. They had sliced the Valkyrie ribbon and had passed the blood rite qualifier, but they would keep training. So much remained to be learned. So much remained that she looked forward to learning with all of them, with her friends, with Cassian. They alternated bedrooms, sleeping wherever was closest to their lovemaking, or fucking. There was a difference, she'd realized. Lovemaking usually happened late at night, or first thing in the morning, when he was lazy and thorough and smiling. Fucking usually happened at lunch or random times, against a wall or bent over a desk or straddling his lap, impaling herself on him again and again. Sometimes it started off as fucking and became the tender, intense thing she called lovemaking. Sometimes the lovemaking dissolved into frantic fucking. She could never tell what would happen, which was part of why she could never get enough. She passed 100 steps, 200, 1,000. Her head was clear. It burned with purpose, with direction and focus. She woke up each morning glad to be there, to throw herself against the world and see what it did. She had music each night at the evening services, where she learned most of the songs and sang with the priestesses, letting her voice ring out alongside Gwyn's. She had music from Cassian's Symphonia, which she played whenever she could. And she had music in her heart, a song made up of Cassian's voice, of Gwyn's and Emery's laughter, of her own breathing as she went down and down the stairs. 2,000? 3,000. Nesta's feet flew, her steps unfaltering, even as her muscles burned. She fought through it, gritted her teeth in a feral grin. She gave herself to the burning, the exhaustion, and the pain. She did not let them consume her, but allowed them to wash over her, through her. Did not permit them to bend or deter her. She was the rock against which things crashed. With each step, each breath, she yielded to the mind stilling. It was the next phase in the Valkyrie mind training, to go from seated calm to active soothing, to be able to steady the mind, focus it, while in the midst of chaos. 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, the mind stilling became as easy as breathing. She would not be mastered by anything again. She was the master of herself. 7,000? 8,000? 9,000? And this person she was becoming, emerging into day by day? She might even like her. The stairs vanished, and then there was only a door before her. Nesta swayed, body still seeming to think it had to keep going around and around. But she took hold of the knob, opened the door to the dusk and city beyond. The lights had all been dimmed, but merry voices filled the streets. No one would prevent her from venturing into the city, to a tavern, and drinking herself silly. No one would come to haul her back. She'd made it down the stairs. Life lay before her. Only she found herself looking up toward the house where a Starfall party would be held in an hour. The male who would be there, who'd encouraged her to come. She faced the city, the lovely, vibrant city. None of it seemed as vibrant as what waited above. The climb would be brutal and almost without end. But at the top, Cassian would be waiting, as he had waited for her for years now. Nesta smiled and began the climb. Cassian, clad in his courtly finery, was standing at the door to the stairs when she returned. He was so exquisite that if Nesta hadn't already been panting from the climb, she would have found herself unable to breathe. 5 steps had Nesta across the hall, her arms around his neck, her mouth on his. She kissed him, and he opened for her, letting those silent words pass between them, holding her so tight their heartbeats echoed into each other. When she pulled away, breathless from the kiss and all that filled her heart, Cassian only smiled. "The party already started," he said, kissing her brow and stepping away. "But it's still nearing its peak." Indeed, music and laughter trickled down from levels above. Cassian extended a hand, and Nesta wordlessly took it, letting him lead her down the hall. When she looked at the steps upward and her legs buckled, he scooped her into his arms and carried her. She leaned her head against his chest, closing her eyes, savoring the sound of his heart thumping. All the world was a song, and his heartbeat its core melody. Open air and music flowed around her, glasses clinking and clothing rustling, and she opened her eyes again as Cassian set her down. Stars flowed overhead, thousands and thousands of stars. She barely remembered last year's starfall, had been too drunk to care. But this, so high up? Nesta didn't care that she was covered in sweat, wearing her leathers amongst a bejeweled crowd. Not as she staggered onto the veranda at the top of the house and gaped at the stars raining across the bowl of the sky. They zoomed by so close, some sparked against the stones, leaving glowing dust in their wake. She had a vague sense of Cassian and Moore and Asriel nearby, of Feyre and Rhys and Lucian, of Elaine and Varian and Helion, of Callias and Vivian, also swollen with child and glowing with joy and strength. Nesta smiled in greeting and left them blinking, but she forgot them within a moment because the stars. She hadn't realized that such beauty existed in the world, that she might feel so full from wonder it could hurt, like her body couldn't contain all of it. And she didn't know why she cried then, but the tears began rolling down her face. The world was beautiful, and she was so grateful to be in it, to be alive, to be here, to see this. She stuck out a hand over the railing, grazing a star as it shot past, and her fingers came away glowing with blue and green dust. She laughed, a sound of pure joy, and she cried more because that joy was a miracle.
That's a sound I never thought to hear from you, girl, Amryn said beside her. The delicate female was regal, in a gown of light gray, diamonds at her throat and wrists, her usual black bob silvered with the starlight. Nesta wiped away her tears, smearing the stardust upon her cheeks and not caring. For a long moment, her throat worked, trying to sort through all that sought to rise from her chest. Amryn just held her stare, waiting. Nesta fell to one knee and bowed her head. I am sorry. Amryn made a sound of surprise, and Nesta knew others were watching, but she didn't care. She kept her head lowered and let the words flow from her heart. You gave me kindness and respect, and your time, and I treated them like garbage. You told me the truth, and I did not want to hear it. I was jealous and scared and too proud to admit it. But losing your friendship is a loss I can't endure. Amryn said nothing, and Nesta lifted her head to find the female smiling, something like wonder on her face. Amryn's eyes became lined with silver, a hint of how they had once been. I went poking about the house when we arrived an hour ago. I saw what you did to this place. Nesta's brow furrowed. She hadn't changed anything. Amryn grabbed Nesta under the shoulder, hauling her up. The house sings. I can hear it in the stone, and when I spoke to it, it answered. Granted, it gave me a pile of romance novels by the end of it, but you caused this house to come alive, girl. I didn't do anything. You made the house, Amryn said, smiling again, a slash of red and white in the glowing dark. When you arrived here, what did you wish for most? Nesta considered, watching a few stars whiz past. A friend. Deep down, I wanted a friend. So you made one. Your power brought the house to life with a silent wish born from loneliness and desperate need. But my power only creates terrible things. The house is good, Nesta breathed. Is it? Nesta considered. The darkness in the pit of the library, it's the heart of the house. Amryn nodded. And where is it now? It hasn't made an appearance in weeks, but it's still there. I think it's just being managed. Maybe the house's knowledge that I'm aware of it and didn't judge it makes it easier to keep in check. Amryn put a hand above Nesta's heart. That's the key, isn't it? To know the darkness will always remain, but how you choose to face it, handle it, that's the important part. Not to let it consume, to focus upon the good, the things that fill you with wonder. She gestured to the stars zooming past. The struggle with that darkness is worth it, just to see such things. But Nesta's gaze had slid from the stars, finding a familiar face in the crowd, dancing with Moore, laughing, his head thrown back, so beautiful she had no words for it. Amryn chuckled gently. And worth it for that, too. Nesta looked back at her friend. Amryn smiled, and her face became as lovely as Cassian's, as the stars arching past. Welcome back to the Night Court, Nesta Archeron. Chapter 62. Spring dawned in Valaris. Nesta welcomed the sun into her bones, her heart, letting it warm her. They had made it through the winter with no movement from Briallen or Baron, no armies unleashing. But Cassian warned that many armies did not attack in the winter, and Briallen might have been amassing them in secret. Asriel was forbidden from getting within a few miles of her, thanks to the threat of the crown, and any reports had to be verified by multiple sources. In short, they knew nothing and could only wait. The mood hadn't been helped by a rare red star blasting across the sky one day, an ill omen. Nesta had heard the priestesses muttering. Cassian reported that even Rhys had been rattled by it, seeming unusually contemplative afterward. But Nesta suspected that the omen wasn't the only thing contributing to Rhys's solemnity. Feyre was only 2 months from giving birth, and they still knew nothing about how to save her. She channeled that growing worry into her training with the priestesses. Asriel and Cassian devised more training simulations, and they moved through them as a unit, fought and battled as a unit. Nesta sometimes wondered if they would ever see battle, if these priestesses would ever be willing to leave here to fight, to face violence that might summon the devouring demons of their pasts. Did she wish to move beyond simulations to actual combat? What would it do to her to see her friends killing or being killed? It was a final test, she supposed, one they might not ever be taking. Perhaps the blood rite, which Cassian had told her was only a few days away, had started as just that, a way to introduce young Illyrian warriors to killing in a contained environment. A stepping stone to the full mercilessness of battle. But Nesta's first foray into merciless battle came in the form of a letter, an impatient, demanding letter that requested her presence immediately, and Cassian's. Eris was waiting for Nesta and Cassian when they arrived in a forest clearing nestled in the middle. But Nesta didn't bother to do more than glance at the High Lord's son, not with the sight rising above the trees. The sacred mountain, the mountain under which Feyre, Rhys, and all the other High Lords had been trapped by Amarantha. It rose like a wave on the horizon, bleak and barren, and somehow thrumming with presence.
Have you never seen it?
Eris asked by way of greeting, tracking her stare.
No.
She looked away from the unnerving peak. Why is it sacred to you? Eris shrugged, and Nesta knew Cassian monitored his every breath.
There are three of them, you know, sister peaks. This one, the mountain called the Prison, and the one the Illyrian brutes call Ramiel. All bald, barren mountains at odds with those around them.
We didn't come for a history lesson,
Cassian muttered. Nesta cut him a look. I asked. I want to know. Cassian snorted and jerked his chin to Eris in a silent order to go on.
We don't know why they exist. But do you not find it strange that two out of the three have underground palaces carved into them?
I'd hardly call the prison a palace, Cassian cut in. Just ask the inmates.
Eris gave him a mocking smile, but continued.
Unsurprisingly, the Illyrians were never curious enough to see what secrets lie beneath Ramiel, if it, too, was carved up like the others by ancient hands.
I thought Amarantha made the court under the mountain herself, Nesta said.
Oh, she decorated it and made us act like a sorry imitation of your court of nightmares, but the tunnels and halls were carved long before. By who? We don't know.
That is all the history I can take, Cassian said,
earning a withering glare from Eris. Nesta followed suit. Cassian only gave her an amused wink before continuing.
Your letter seemed to imply that your father was making a move.
Out with it.
My father went to the continent again last week. He came back seeming normal, without the glassy-eyed aloofness my soldiers displayed. He did not invite me to accompany him or explain what he discussed with Briallen. I can only assume the fallout is approaching, though, and wanted to warn you. It was not something I could risk putting in writing. But for now, it seems as if the world is holding its breath.
For what? Nesta asked. For you to find the harp. Nesta blinked and realized too late, too slowly, that they had not told Eris they'd found it. And her blink had given it away.
Eris demanded.
You have it?
Does it make any difference? Cassian said casually. The Night Court possesses two objects of the trove. I'd say yes. Eris straightened. Is that what all these delays have been about? Biding your time so you can learn the trove's secrets and use the power for your own gains? That's absurd, Nesta snapped. What do we have to gain?
Red flame sizzled in Eris's eyes.
What did the King of Hybern have to gain by attaining the cauldron and invading our lands?
We have no interest in conquest, Eris, Cassian said, crossing his arms.
You know that. And we're not going to use the trove.
Eris barked a laugh. Nesta could see that he didn't believe them, that he was so used to the twisted politics and scheming of his court that even when the simple, easy truth was offered, he could not see it.
I find myself not entirely comfortable with your court possessing two items in the trove.
His gaze shifted to Nesta, especially when you have so many other weapons in your arsenal. Nesta stiffened, but Cassian didn't so much as shift on his feet.
Rhys has his own plans, Eris. You can't be foolish enough to think we'd tell you all of them. But I can assure you that they don't involve using the trove.
Nesta tried not to gape at the cool, amused voice that had come out of Cassian. A courtier's voice, as if he'd been listening to her and Rhysand and had perfectly replicated that combination of boredom and cruelty. Nesta couldn't help the thrill that shot down her spine. She wanted him to use that voice in the bedroom, wanted him to whisper like that in her ear while he...
So you claim, Eris said. I suppose you're going after the crown now.
His hair shone like embers in the dappled light. Cassian smirked.
We'll tell you when you need to know, and we'll try not to forget this time.
Eris picked at a piece of lint on his jacket. At his side hung the dagger Rhys and Feyre had gifted him, simple and plain compared to the finery on him. Her dagger.
You'd be truly stupid to go after Briallen directly.
Leave the heroics to the brutes, Eris, Cassian said.
Wouldn't want to risk cutting up those pretty hands.
Eris's fingers curled slightly on his biceps. Nesta reined in her smile. Cassian's words had found their mark.
And what will you do when you have all three objects in the trove?
Eris's brows flattened.
You can't destroy them, and I doubt hiding them would work, considering the danger that gathers around us. I don't see why you wouldn't use them.
Nesta kept silent, content to let Cassian take the lead.
Cassian let out a soft laugh, and Nesta's blood again sang at the mastery of it.
He'd toy with Eris a bit longer. Indeed, Cassian asked coolly,
And what are you going to do to stop us?
Eris only said, If you fail in retrieving the crown, you risk Briallen using it upon you. She could turn you on each other, make you do unspeakable things. Even reveal to her where the other two objects are, and you'd have no choice but to tell her everything.
He worried about them revealing their alliance for his own sake. You threaten to expose us. Do not pursue the crown.
We'll see, Cassian said, a portrait of unruffled calm. Nesta nearly snickered as he nodded toward the dagger at Eris's side.
We have our own ways to protect ourselves against the crown.
Nesta hid her surprise. The weapons she made shielded against the trove?
No one had told her such a thing.
Eris glowered.
Has this been the plan the whole time? To string me along, make me an enemy of my father, then use the trove against all of us? You made yourself an enemy of your father.
Cassian said, smiling faintly.
When he finds out, I wonder if he'll let your hounds rip you to shreds, or if he'll do it himself.
Eris paled slightly.
Don't you mean if he finds out?
Cassian said nothing, kept his face neutral. Nesta stifled her smugness and did the same. Eris observed them. For the first time since Nesta had known the male, uncertainty banked the fire in his gaze. And then he turned toward the other subject in his letter, facing Nesta before he asked,
And my offer for you?
Not one ounce of affection or longing laced his words. Nesta lifted her chin, smirking at last. I suppose, once we have the crown in our hands, the Night Court won't need you after all. Neither will I. She could have sworn Cassian was repressing a laugh, but she kept her gaze on Eris, who went rigid, rippling with rage.
I do not appreciate being toyed with, Nesta Archeron. My offer was sincere. Stay with the Night Court, and you risk your ruin.
Cassian cut in smoothly. Try to fuck us over, Eris, and you risk yours. Eris's upper lip curled.
Do whatever you want.
He straightened, as if shaking off any emotion, face going cold and cruel again.
It's your lives you gamble with, not mine.
He chuckled, nodding to Cassian.
So what if the world loses another brute to war? Good riddance.
Cassian